Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Joining us on the line, Rolene Marks with the Israel Report. Rolene, haven't spoken to you in a long time. How are you?
Oh my gosh, I tell you, I'm so happy to speak to you. I've had to stop dancing so that I'm coherent this morning.
All right. Well, we're not necessarily coherent, so everything is absolutely fine then. You know, then we certainly don't have any problems.
We'll balance each other out. What can I say?
All right. So it has been an incredible amount of news taking place, and certainly since we've last spoken. Can we please start off with just a bit of information around Erekat? He is apparently suffering from severe COVID. There were reports that he had passed away. What is the latest with regard to who is he and what is the latest?
Well, let's first take a look at where he is at the moment, and he still remains on a ventilator in serious but stable condition. He's in Hadassah Hospital, and what I found quite interesting this week is that when the communique was put out by his office, they didn't say that he was in hospital in Jerusalem. I said he was in Tel Aviv. I mean, you can see the political inference coming through.
Even
in
at a
that.
Time like that.
They put him on ECMO a couple of days ago, and he is receiving the absolute best care, top specialists at Hadassah Hospital, as well as consulting with American specialists as well. And it's quite interesting to see the message that I'm getting from people, because people are messaging me saying, you know, if he does pass away, you know, Israel's going to get blamed. But so let's take a look at Erekat and let's see why this is such a big news story. You know, I just have to note that he previously received a lung transplant. So we do have to understand that as far as the COVID treatment is concerned, he has a, you know, obviously a major comorbidity. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So why this is such a news story, and you know, it goes back to my pet hate, you know, always check multiple news sources and reputable news sources, and probably don't take your news from Twitter to make sure that you have the accurate story. So Eb Erekat is the chief negotiator for the Palestinian Authority, and he's been a very, very controversial figure over the years. During the Second Intifada, you know, he embarked on almost a war of propaganda. Oh, frog in my throat. I really shouldn't groom my cat. He embarked on this policy of propaganda, accusing Israeli soldiers of killing hundreds of Palestinians. This, of course, wasn't true, but Israel hasn't really made the recovery from some of his accusations that he made at the time. And this particular one was on British television. He also has previously called Israel an apartheid state. Now, those of us who understand South Africa very well would understand that a treatment of somebody of his stature wouldn't have happened in the heinous apartheid regime. He also has accused Israel of spreading coronavirus amongst the Palestinians to try and kill people.
Oh, that was us.
So this is a man.
Israel did that. I didn't realize.
It wouldn't be a crisis, Howard, if we weren't blamed.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
come
absolutely,
on.
Absolutely, 100%.
So this is a man who right now is receiving the best possible care after he and his fellow Palestinian leadership turned away aid that had been sent from the United Arab Emirates prior to the Abraham Accords, earmarked for the Palestinians because the plane had landed in Tel Aviv. And yet, the minute he took seriously ill with COVID, you know, they knew who to call. And he was extricated from his home in Ramallah and brought to Hadassah Hospital with the aid of the IDF. So it's going to be quite fascinating to watch how this plays out, you know, should he recover,
we've seen these types of situations before. Does it ever really create any goodwill, or is it just completely ignored so as to continue the old narratives?
Well, I think one of the great tragedies of this is that this is such an opportunity to create goodwill. This is such an opportunity to say, look, this is how we can work together. You know, at some stage, you've got to make bold choice, like many other countries are starting to do at the moment, and take that big step towards peace. And quite frankly, and we see it played out very much now, the Arab world is starting to get very, very tired of this kind of attitude coming from the Palestinian leadership. You know, we've heard it in commentary in the mainstream media. We see it in the interaction on social media. And we've even heard European countries within the last few weeks kind of saying, you know what, guys, you need to start getting your act together, because the Middle East is rapidly changing and you are going to be left behind.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how this develops, and if it, I guess if it hasn't changed before, there's little chance that it'll change now, but maybe it will. The Palestinians are also, speaking about this subject, are looking to sue Britain for the Balfour Declaration. Is this true? I mean, could Israel sue the Romans for the destruction of the temple?
Maybe we should try.
Maybe anyway, we should try. But is this a real thing? They want to sue Britain.
This is the real thing. Happened last night. Palestinians filed a complaint to sue the British government for the 1917 declaration. That's the Balfour Declaration, which basically was a document stating Britain's support for a national home for the Jewish people. And in the complaint, which was filed in Nablus, which is a town in the West Bank, it said that the suffering of the Palestinians stemmed from this document. And I'm going to quote from the document. It says, the British mandate is at the root of the suffering of the Palestinian people and has paved the way for the violation of their rights and the plunder of their land. So let's take a deep dive. Maybe we want to remind these lawyers, who obviously haven't done their due diligence, that when the British mandate was divided and they were given the opportunity to have a nation state of their own, they turned it down instead, preferring to go to war, which they lost, which was our war of independence. And maybe we should tell these lawyers the evidentiary support of how many times we've tried to sue for peace with the Palestinians, and those opportunities have been turned down, and that when we do have opportunities for their leadership to come and sit at the table and start negotiations, they turn that down. I mean, it would be very interesting to see how this would play out in a court of law.
And which court of law, I guess, would be the other question. I mean, do they take this to The Hague? Where do you go with something like this?
Well, this is an interesting one. It doesn't say which court they are hoping to
jurisdiction
play
over
this
something
out
that happened in 1917.
Something happened in 1917. We'll completely forget about the interim years, where there've been attempts to negotiate, there've been attempts to offer the Palestinians a state of their own.
It seems to be a very, very cheap publicity stunt, because clearly it can't go anywhere, nothing can come of it. But doesn't it really just scream of continued victimhood, instead of saying that we want to look to build, create peace, live in a world in which everybody looks after and cares for each other? We're now going back to 1917, because the longer you can be the victim and the longer you can showcase something like that, I guess the more entrenched your victimhood is. It really does talk to that narrative, doesn't it?
Well, that's exactly that. And it comes at a time where the Middle East is rapidly changing, and we're looking at ways, okay, save a few countries. We're looking at ways where we can work together, where we can improve the economics structure of the region. We can look at ways to prevent hegemonic regimes like the Iranians, who sponsor terror, who have been responsible for so much of the heartache in the Middle East over the years. And we're finally stopping those narratives. You know, in a matter of weeks, the US and Bahrain will sign a memorandum of understanding spending on combating anti-Semitism. This is massive. A couple of weeks ago, Saudi Arabia, the king and officials, they're giving the ordinance to religious leaders and to schools to stop the anti-Semitic education, that there will be no more hate preaching in mosques, and it will no longer be allowed in school. You and I, who are very, very active on social media, especially places like Twitter, can see that for Israel, the Emiratis are doing it. We are. They are the most vocal supporters for Israel, because now they understand. Just the other day, I received a message. Yeah. Just the other day, I received a message from a young guy in Saudi Arabia saying, you know, enough is enough. We, the youth in Saudi Arabia, we want to talk to Israel. We want to ask questions.
We don't have a lot of time, but just tell us as well about the rockets. Apparently there were rockets fired into Israel as well, all in the name of peace, I imagine.
Well, definitely in the name of peace. And, you know, coincidentally, just after we've had that delegation from the Emirates that arrived at Ben Gurion the other day to sign into effect some of the memorandums of understanding as part of the Abraham Accords. And 2 days ago, we had a rocket fired into Israel from Gaza that was intercepted by the Iron Dome, and the Israeli Air Force struck targets there in response. The early hours of this morning, two rockets fired into Israel, one intercepted, one landing in an empty field. And, you know, when you look at this and look at, you know, ridiculous cases filed against the British government, we have to look at, you know, this perpetual, exactly as you said, the perpetual narrative of victimhood, anti-normalization, anti-peace. And unfortunately for the Palestinians, even though their cause by many is seen as noble, and you know, we don't detract from their right to nationhood, the world is starting to really, really lose patience from this.
But I think there's a difference between having the right to nationhood and actually doing something positive about to establish it. And I think those are two very different things. I think that the Palestinian right to nationhood is not something that many people, including the Israeli government, would disagree with. What where the discomfort lies is the road to get there and the consequence of such a nationhood. And that is something that I think is becoming more evident as time progresses and as other countries in the Middle East start to adopt a bit of a different approach. Rolene Marks, unfortunately, we do need to leave it there. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. Absolutely fantastic.